Hey everyone, welcome back to the second ever episode of the Film Fun Podcast. I have in my script here written by our amazing producer Tom, not me, other Tom, that it's the second ever, so I guess I'm going to be saying ever for each episode, the third ever, the fourth ever, what have you. But this is the Film Fun Podcast. The first one went swimmingly. I don't know if people say that anymore, but I was super happy with it. We have a community of filmmakers. We are an alternative funding platform for short film funding. You write one sentence for a chance to receive up to $10,000 in funding and other prizes to help accomplish your short. And we have this awesome community. And even if you don't win the film fund, you're entered into a chat community. You can find other filmmakers, message with them, free lunch with them, maybe find someone for your next production. But we don't interact with that community enough. So I wanted to, in addition to the chat community, launch a podcast so we can start interviewing our previous winners, our sponsors, anyone in the film community we interact with, and really share some cool insights for everyone out there. So we do have contests open right now. The current deadline is December 8th. But if you are listening at another date, check the website at thefilmfund.co/contest for the most up-to-date information. So today we have a man named, I don't know why I said that, we our wonderful, off to a great start here, our wonderful guest, Chris Mendoza. He is CEO, executive producer, I'm not sure, I didn't even introduce myself, this episode is all over the place. I'm your host, Thomas Verity, founder and executive producer at the Film Fund. Last time I said CEO, I don't know what titles are for anyway, but we have Chris Mendoza, executive producer at Maestro Filmworks, who is one of our amazing sponsors. Chris actually approached me, I guess it was a couple of years ago now, about sponsoring a post-production prize with the Film Fund. In addition to funding, you can also receive things like Kitsplit gift cards, Adobe Creative Cloud memberships, and thanks to Maestro Filmworks, up to 15 minutes of color grading services from an amazing post-production and production studio based in Philadelphia. So Chris has also won an Emmy for some work. I'm going to talk about that a lot because I think it's super cool, and we'll get into how I have an Emmy by proxy, what I say. So without further ado, Chris, take it away. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you were involved on Americano, which was our last week's guest.
Awesome. Tim's project. First off, thank you for having me. I watched the first ever episode last time. So happy to be on the second ever episode. It's a pleasure. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation with you and Tim. Yeah, I think it's great what you're doing here in terms of being focused on building a community around the Film Fund, just because you'll hear me talk about it a lot in all aspects of things, but filmmaking is just so collaborative, and just expanding networks and surrounding yourself with other people that are cool and creative, but other people that help you hone your craft. I think it's super important. So building communities and networks within the film community in itself, I think is super important. Thanks for the intro. I go by executive producer. Executive producer and founder of Maestro Filmworks. I think when our organization gets to a certain level, then I'll feel comfortable calling myself a CEO. I think early in my business days, I was like CEO, founder, president, executive producer, I thought it was cool to learn all this stuff about my business card, but I had that proverbial we when it was just me. In terms of Maestro Filmworks, we just hit our 15th year in business. It's founded in May 2005. Initially just kind of a, thank you very much. Congrats. Big milestone, celebrated during COVID, was not able to do a big celebration or anything like that. Just happened to get to 15 years, I think. It went by very quickly in retrospect, but definitely there were some times, somewhere in the middle early where, we're certainly just slogging, working my tail off, slowly just trying to build and focus on, growing the business. But started out as kind of a one-man band, producer, just really I'd almost call myself a videographer at that point. Not to knock that term, but I think kind of everyone kind of goes through that stage coming out of film school where you are good at a little bit of everything, but I never actually felt comfortable calling myself an editor or a DP or a director. I was kind of like doing all of those things but not well, and I think at the time it was one of those things that ultimately prepared me for running a company and managing those positions. Definitely at the time I was kind of wearing multiple hats, kind of working out of my home. And then, yeah, I think, you know, the rest is history, you know, in terms of growing and moving forward.
That's awesome. Definitely an incredible story. Yeah. And the Film Fund hasn't been around as long as Maestro, but I definitely resonate with that proverbial we, you know, started in the dorm room kind of thing, saying, oh, we'll talk to customers. We'll deal with that right away. When it's, you know, it's just at the time, it was just me replying to that email writing we. So that's always, it's cool to see the path there. And you have people email you, oh, can you shoot my wedding? I'm like, well, I don't know. I'm a videographer, am I a producer? So yeah, it's always funny how people find their paths there. So a little bit about how we met. I think I first met Chris at a private friends and family screening of Americano, Tim Viola's project, the first project we ever funded. But I didn't really get to talk to him that much. It was just kind of like a red carpet, not even red carpet, just like a little photo op thing outside the theater. Private screening that was so cool. But I really got to talk to you more at that first film festival, First Glance. I had my own short film, Son of Blackbeard, in there, and then Americano screen there as well. So it's kind of there representing two different projects, which is so incredible. And then Chris approached me, I guess it was a few months later, about sponsoring a prize. So I guess if you could talk a little bit about that, I guess, why did you want to sponsor a prize with the Film Fund? Where, because I mean, it's so awesome we're able to give more prizes away to the Film Fund community. But I really want to get your take on what made you think of that and what the impetus for that sponsorship was.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, firstly, I saw the work that you're doing. Obviously, we were beneficiaries of the Film Fund being the first film funded. And, you know, I think without that, we really would not have been able to get over the hump. You know, Tim mentioned in the last episode, you know, he to do that reshoot, you know, already kind of took some personal funds and things out to get us over the hump. So, you know, definitely super appreciative of, you know, having that to get us our sound mix. Over at Shake Audio Post, by the way.
Shake Audio Post.
which is a division of Milk Boy Studios. But okay. All those kind of things in terms of getting us over the hump, I don't think we would have been able to complete Americano the way we did without that support. So, you know, being on the receiving side, I definitely saw some of these things start to line up with Maestro's agenda. So I talked about kind of starting the business 15 years ago. It was very much pretty corporate. A lot of it was, you know, talking head videos for corporate clients. Oftentimes, you know, I don't want to knock it. It's definitely, you know, a big part of the work that we do. But in the last couple of years, you know, part of it was with the start of Americano, was really starting to try to push the creative envelope a little bit more, start to do creative development. Americano was one of the first bigger projects that we kind of worked on that had a wider bit of distribution, and starting to work on other short films and other projects. And ultimately, I really wanted to kind of, you know, find other avenues to meet new filmmakers and new talent, but also align ourselves with projects that, you know, were of that same caliber and also had the same mindset of, you know, purely doing creative work, you know, passion projects and things like that. It was very challenging for us in the beginning to kind of switch gears. Often it was a let's do client work, you know, first couple hours of the day, and like switch gears to do this passion project. And for a while we kept putting it in the backseat because it wasn't paying, you know. Sure. But I think ultimately there's the two kind of projects, I think, in this stage of our company and any stage of a filmmaker, you know, there's the projects that kind of feed your bank account, and there's the ones that feed your soul. And the creative stuff, I think, you know, anyone will tell you, narrative filmmaking, even documentary filming, working on music videos. I think those are the ones that I'm proud to work on. I, you know, watch them, you know, multiple times, even though I've, you know, watched them already hundreds of times in post. Stuff that I share, it's stuff that's on our reel. You know, it's the kind of stuff that I'm proud to share. Not that I'm not proud of the work we do on the corporate and commercial side. But you know, we are kind of enabling someone else's vision, their marketing videos, your sales videos. So, seeing that transition to doing more creative work a couple of years ago, I think, you know, really saw the work you're doing, trying to align ourselves with just more narrative filmmaking. You know, we had the capacity to maybe produce one to two, every 1 or 2 years in terms of a short film. But this seemed like an opportunity to kind of have a wider reach and, you know, do more in terms of, you know, getting our hands and sinking our teeth into more creative projects.
Absolutely. And we're definitely happy to get your name out there to our community. Talent is at Maestro is so good. And now you have an Emmy going from talking about corporate videos that you didn't want to knock and you've won an Emmy. Tell us a little bit about that project. And earlier I said, I have an Emmy by proxy and I'm going to continue with that term because I recommended Chris was hiring an editor and I knew an editor who was amazing. So I recommended him for the job and the project won an Emmy. So I say that I have an Emmy by proxy, which is definitely an official award and I will be having it made. But Chris, tell us a little bit about your actual Emmy and how that process happened.
Sure. So first off, before jumping into it, I do want to shout out Rob Jennings, who is not on social media, so he'll probably never see this unless I link him to it. But yeah, he is the, you know, he's the amazing editor that worked on the Emmy-winning segment. Yep.
Rob texted me when it happened. He goes, "I won an Emmy, all thanks to you." I'm like, well, I don't know about that at all, but thank you.
But yeah, no. In terms of the award, it was for a show that we've been working on. We're actually in halfway through season two right now, but it's called FTW Philly. It's a show that focuses on esports and gaming in Philadelphia and beyond, you know, with esports being such a booming industry. You know, there was a production partner that approached us. They're based here as well, venture-backed gaming technology company called Nerd Street Gamers. And they were looking to get the show off the ground and looking for the right partner to do it. I know they interviewed a couple of folks early on. We were fortunate enough to get the contract. And having never been in the TV space before, you know, they kind of caught us in this, you know, we were doing the corporate and commercial stuff. We're trying to venture out into creative stuff. And all of a sudden, you know, this TV show kind of fell in our lap. It was definitely a totally different grind. I'm sure everyone here can tell you, you know, way more went into it than we thought would happen. You know, we need a couple things going in. It was the same skill set that we were already doing for a lot of corporate and short documentary type jobs, visual storytelling, just overall carving out narratives in what are otherwise on the surface kind of straightforward stories and kind of digging deeper. That's really what we tasked ourselves with. And, you know, I think also the challenging part was finding segments that became part of the thing of, you know, we have an episode next Friday or this Friday, what do we shoot? You know, so it became this weekly grind. We were fortunate enough to get nominated for 3 Emmys. And then we won one. It was for a segment called Enabled Gaming, which coincidentally featured our animator, Andrew Zudak. And he was essentially, he's created a startup on the side that uses gaming, in this case, driving games, for him to connect with his grandfather who's aging and battling dementia. And it was kind of using the power of gaming for, you know, hand-eye coordination to mental acuity that he was otherwise losing grasp of. And it came at a very interesting time for the segment because shortly after we shot it, his grandfather passed away. And, you know, so it's kind of just, you know, a whole lot of emotion and a lot of
incredible story,
you know, good family storytelling in terms of what Andrew is trying to do, all kind of through the lens of gaming. So yeah, that, you know, that's what won us the Emmy. And, you know, I think in terms of kind of what that means for us going beyond, we are in season two of the show. If I hadn't mentioned it, which I don't think I did, it airs on NBC Sports Philadelphia.
I was going to ask, yeah, how do we watch it? Okay, Friday night.
It's on NBC Sports Philly Plus, which is like a digital channel. I think if you subscribe to Xfinity Comcast at 9 p.m. and 11 p.m. it airs on NBC Sports Philly. But yeah, it is a weekly grind. You know, we are pushing out episodes every week. And, you know, there's always things that happen. Some last minute changes, you know, we're sending the file off and there's a title that's off or, you know, random flash frame, all these post-production and production things that, you know, you deal with in a much more condensed and stressful environment. So yeah, the whole different grind for us. Thankful to win an Emmy on the first ever show that we worked on.
Do you feel that training that TV muscle helps with narrative or documentary filmmaking or your corporate filmmaking? And
I would say on the corporate and documentary, yes. Narrative, I think definitely a different grind, much slower. You almost want the runway and room to kind of think about your characters, think about things. In this case, it was kind of like, here's the subject. You know, we have a pre-interview, try to quickly get to like, all right, what's the story we're telling here? Because oftentimes, there was like what I call the book report segment. You know, we could just be like, you know, this is Tom. He runs a film fund, blah, blah, blah.
Right,
but it's kind
right.
of like, this is what makes Tom tick. This is why Tom does this. And these are the people he helps. And, you know, like kind of digging a little deeper sometimes was, you know, more of the challenge in the technical aspect of filmmaking. But on the technical side, we also just severely ramped up. You know, we went from 3-4 editors and post-production people in the office to, I think, at one point, 8 or 9 people working on stuff. So, you know, we upgraded servers and all this other stuff just to, you know, get the infrastructure ready to work on a, you know, a weekly show. Exciting stuff, but certainly one of those things that, you know, still a learning process, but it's definitely inspired us to kind of start to work on other pilots, develop other shows and stuff, you know, as a, just kind of, you know, different segment to work on in terms of creative work altogether. Mm-hmm.
You talked a little bit earlier about the, some of the difficulties you and Tim had producing Americano, getting off the ground. I guess relating that to doing a lot of corporate shoots, as well as the TV now in COVID, I mean, what are the difficulties you think COVID has added, aside from obviously the logistics and the production guidelines you have to follow?
Definitely a lot of it's just people's comfortability. Oftentimes it's like, you know, we put our own safe sets and health protocol for our production, and we based it off a lot of CDC stuff and kind of all this thought leadership that was coming out through some other industry guilds and stuff. But you know, it's one thing's like, all right, we feel ready to go out and go shooting things, but the more we jumped on these pre-production calls, you know, this doesn't mean like whoever we're filming or wherever we wanted to film was really ready for us to come barging in, no matter how buttoned up we had it. Things were starting to get better. You know, obviously this week things are starting to look grim. We were starting to build momentum of getting production back up, you know, even shot a short narrative a couple weeks ago, you know, through this short film initiative that we have.
Make long story shorts, right?
Yes. And if I could plug that really quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Plug away.
For those Instagram folks out there, the account is at Make Long Story Shorts. So we call the initiative Long Story Shorts, or LSS for short, internally. But essentially, you know, what that is we're creating 1-minute films strictly for the gram, as we call it. You know, I know much after we started this initiative, which is January 2018, you know, Instagram now can do IGTV and it's longer, and everyone's like, you know, let's do longer form. But there was something about the challenge of a 1-minute film, you know, even trying to inject some kind of 3-act structure or tell a full story, or sometimes just tell enough of a story to be interesting. But yeah, you know, it's a, kind of an internal initiative that started. It was really initially driven to kind of collaborate and be creative internally and kind of spurred, you know, ideas and fun things. You know, people that don't normally direct get to direct. You know, some people will write scripts and submit them. Someone else will direct it. But it's just really a fun kind of space, you know, a lab, so to speak, for us to try storytelling techniques, or, you know, even just visual technical techniques. You know, we did one that was kind of a bit in light of, you know, I wouldn't say it's purely animated, but, you know, visual effects, kind of very Waking Life with Keanu Reeves, that kind of treatment to the visuals. And that was one of my favorite ones that we did that first year. You know, and we did some that were, you know, with miniatures in terms of, you know, all just voiceover miniatures. Some are love stories, some are horror. We had some that just had some, you know, gruesome horror VFX and stuff. You know, the important thing I think is, you know, people just get to mess around, have fun. We've set up parameters for ourselves so that it's, you know, doesn't get too big.
Right. I was going to ask, in terms of getting bigger, do you plan on, like, if you find a Make Long Story short that you really, really like, would you expand that into a longer film? Be it a short or a feature?
Absolutely. I think it's been a good way to experiment with ideas and see what people respond to. It's also been a great way to just meet new people. We're meeting new actors, new DPs, new directors that are like, this is kind of cool. And there's a certain level of, like, if you've ever done one of those 40-hour films, which I think you mentioned you did, Tim and I did one. That's where Tim Viola and I became close on a 40-hour film festival. But it has this all hands on deck feel to it. Just one day. It, you know, it's a 1-minute deliverable. So it's kind of low stakes. And, you know, people just come on and, you know, no one really gets paid for coming on. We just really just pay for food, sometimes location.
And you have all the equipment running your production.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're at a point where, you know, we don't have to rent anything. And oftentimes, you know, it's kind of like, hey, should we rent this one little piece that we don't have? And as long as it's in the, you know, the nominal budget that we put together, you know, there are parameters that we kind of go outside of sometime, but it's usually one location, two characters, $300 entire budget for some of these. So my vision for Make Long Story Shorts is, you know, build up that Instagram account, start to get outside collaborations as well. We've collaborated now with four different directors that aren't part of the organization that, you know, pitch an idea and we work with them. And we still do have a steady stream of people coming in and emailing some folks,
That's great.
Outside ideas. So the idea is to build up that, you know, build up that account and hopefully kind of get a corporate sponsor. So, you know,
absolutely
Black Magic or Canon, if you guys are listening, you know, want to spend a couple hundred dollars a month and tap into a community of filmmakers, you know,
maybe the Film Fund could do some cross promo on that off to Tom Ranieri, our wonderful producer. If you're listening, make a note. Maybe we'll, try to help out, make long story shorts and do some cool cross promo stuff as well. Cause that just sounds like such a great project and short form content. we were talking last week about how it's so important in terms of creating bigger content, about having something always in your back pocket. That was kind of the takeaway from Americano and from Tim. Tim said, you will never let him forget the instance when he, the producer asked him, what's your future?
And he just goes,
So, in terms of Americano, tell us a little bit about that, how you got, and I mean, we heard it from Tim last week, but for any listeners out there who are not listening, and just a quick recap, Americano was the first film the Film Fund funded. Tim wrote one, I guess it was Tim's submission to you guys. You produced it, but I guess he wrote the actual sentence. Write one sentence describing the film and what you would use some of the funding for if you were to win. You can win up to $10,000 and other prizes to produce that film. Right now we focus on shorts. We will be expanding to feature films incredibly soon. I don't have a date yet, but super excited about that. But Americano, I have the pitch sentence here that I'm going to reveal if you didn't hear it last week. But Chris, give us a quick little synopsis or log line about what Americano is about.
Sure. Now it's my turn to butcher the log line.
And then I'll read back the perfect one back to you. Right after.
Yeah. If I remember the log line that we have, across the media's, you know, Syrian refugees on the eve of deportation, kind of has to use his cyber hacking skills in order to, clear his name and be able to stay. But little does he know that the person that he's doing this for is, basically a corrupt politician that is trying to corner him, for his own political agenda.
Very cool. You handled that a lot more gracefully than Tim did when I asked him to read the actual sentence that won the funding. It is, when an undocumented refugee hacker discovers evidence linking a politician to a tragedy on social media, he teams up with a PR director to expose the story. Film is shot, need funds for audio post. How did you get involved with Tim? Because I talked to Tim a little bit about the nexus of the project and you guys were in a coffee shop, but in terms of actually meeting Tim and getting to work with him, and in terms of both of your experiences, how did that happen?
So Tim and I met, the only job I had out of college was working for a professional services company, Deloitte. I had, graduated from film school and I was like, I need a job. I'm going to work here for a year, save up some money. And then I'm going to focus big time on this film production company. And, I was there for 3.5 years. I don't regret it, even though, definitely became one of those things where I quickly knew that this is not what I want to be doing.
Sure.
Long-term, but, I think it set me up for, learning a lot, just about corporate communication and clients and meeting a network of people that I still keep in touch with these days. One of those people being Tim. So he actually was also a communications guy that was kind of working on some video there. And just to clarify, I was producing videos for Deloitte. I wasn't an accountant or consultant or anything like that. But I actually met Tim probably a couple of weeks after I left, in 2009. And there was this guy, I went to go visit my old office and, had lunch with some of the guys working there. And then, there's this guy sitting in my old desk and they're just like, hey, this guy's from Philly for the day. You know, he's just up here for the day. You guys may want to, meet each other. And I remember Tim's like, "Hey, how's it going? You're from Philly, blah, blah, blah." And then like, yeah, I didn't hear from him for a little bit. And that's how
he
we first
ghosted
met.
me.
And then, yeah, and then he left that job and worked for another job here in Philly. And he kind of reached out for some client work for that job. And we worked on a couple of video projects together, more as a client vendor. And then in 2013, I believe it was 2013, he emailed me and was like, "Do you want to work on this 48-hour film festival together in that August?" And I was like, "Sure, never done one, but I will give it a try."
Yeah. To clarify, actually, I have never done one either.
Okay,
gotcha. I may have said I shot a film in 48 hours, but it wasn't like an official 48-hour film festival event.
Yeah, so that short was called Work Life. It was for the 48-hour Philly Film Festival here in Philly. It was a lot of fun. We it was just a bunch of meetings in terms of like, what are we going to do and things like that. And we quickly became friends, kind of breached that client vendor relationship, quickly. And then, just collaborated on that. And, it was just such a pleasure working with him as a creative collaborator. That naturally we just kept saying like, let's work on some other projects. We had been kicking ideas around for the next couple years. Both kind of, I was running the business and he had a full-time job. And we're kind of like, let's do this, let's do that. And it was around 2016. There's this one other idea that, we were already doing pre-production on. We were kind of like doing some location scouting, some initial budget stuff. And then the 2016 kind of election cycle came up and he was like, he had this idea that, involved immigration and ICE and corrupt politicians. And, with the political climate then, we were kind of like, we can't afford to not make this film right now. This is timely. And there's something that he had already written well before that. So, I think everything was just amplified by everything going on. I think that's partly what resonated with a lot of viewers, even, as it came out, obviously, in the last couple of years. I think that's a large part of why we just dove head on into the project. Yeah.
And it's still relevant, I would say, with everything going on, politically and socially. Tim talked about how it was hard to find an audience for, but I think maybe because that audience is everyone and it's about America and patriotism and what that means to different people. And I think that's maybe why he felt that the audience was a little bit difficult to pin down, because it is so relatable to so many different people. There's not just one, this is the customer segment or the target audience we're shooting for. So I think that makes a lot of sense, and definitely makes sense now looking back at 2016 and the election, where the idea came from and how it relates.
Sure. I absolutely think it's still relatable. The hope is there's a point where it's not relatable, where, people getting deported, it is no longer just, an issue that we're worrying about. But, I think it's one of those issues that's still going to continue to be pervasive, regardless of kind of, who's in power. I think it was tough to find an audience. I do think for a number of reasons. It was kind of a longer short. I think that the cut was over 20 minutes that we were submitting initially to some festivals. So that was tough in terms of kind of being in this long, it was a longer short, not quite, I don't say it was almost in a no man's land of time, but, oftentimes these short film segments in film festivals is maybe an hour long, an hour or two long, and you watch five movies, 5 to 10 movies. So if you, if you're there for an hour long segment and, one film dominates, almost half of the time there, I think that's where it's tough lengthwise. But the other one,
Did you know it was going to be
that
long?
We did not. No. So Tim
went crazy with power.
He has such a, his own style of writing that is so visually packed and stuff. And, I don't think it's unique to him necessarily, but it's definitely something that I see in a lot of his scripts where, it's two or three lines in the script, but that's actually like 6 minutes long on screen.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. Like, I think in the script, it's like there's this motorcycle scene where the main protagonist, Isaac, rather, played by Adam Boudron, he jumps on a motorcycle and kind of short of a chase scene, kind of flies all throughout Philly on his motorcycle. And I think that was like one line in the script.
Oh my God. That's a long scene and sequence.
I forget exactly how many pages it was.
I would love to see a script to screen on that where, you know, where they show like the script, the writing at the bottom, the text, and then
he's just kind of pauses the thing at top. That
one would just be static on that line for about 4 minutes.
There were certainly some parts in there that were, visually descriptive. There was a couple of things that we worked on that, kudos to Tim and, the editor, Ed Cipolla, just had the balls to really part with. There was this one, oneer that we worked on that probably took, you know, entire half day or day to kind of do this 1.5 to 2 minute oneer of Isaac entering the coffee shop for the first time. We had an awesome movie operator here in Philly.
And a wonder for those out there is a shot, if you want to explain it, Chris.
Sure. It's one long take where the camera never cuts. Super choreographed, super well thought out in terms of cast, camera, lighting, and everything else. And this wonder was, you know, what a lot of the lighting design and everything kind of centered around because, oftentimes, if you shoot a two-person conversation, you light person A, and then you switch to person B. But this is one of the wonders where, like, the camera turned left, turned right,
just kind of went down this.
Yeah. So we really had to hide a lot of lights, and the DP Guillermo Cameo, kind of was battling a lot of this. Also, you know, the low-budget filmmaking part of it too. We didn't have a grid on the ceiling or anything like that. It's kind of like, how do we light this space? Because you literally see in the shot 360 degrees of the space where we can't hide any light stands and things like that. So we're relying on a lot of practicals. We put a lot of lights on the outside that we ran cables to or generators. So
and you ended up cutting it.
It was just, I think we didn't cut it out completely, but within this one, or they made plenty of cuts. So
I see. Okay.
It just became, more of a cut sequence. But I think it was one of those things that like, you know, when you, I don't know the term, is it eat your babies? When
kill your babies.
Kill your babies. Don't eat babies.
kill your darlings. Yeah, we're not having
kill your
we're
darling,
not eating babies
eat your darlings,
on this.
Kill your babies, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we're eating babies and killing darlings apparently today.
I think that was, something that I probably would have had a very hard time making decision to cut just because of so much time and effort that went into it. I forget how many takes we did. I'll go back and look, but it's one of those things where like it's already getting long in the tooth to kind of include this entire one, or we're kind of in that 26 minute realm. So
what would you say is a big takeaway from that experience in terms of cutting it up?
I would take a step back and say the takeaway is, have a better estimate of, overall screen time and everything else going in. I think as Tim mentioned, we, essentially failed the first time in principal photography.
Did you storyboard this?
It was storyboarded for particular scenes. There were some other scenes that were not. So what happened here also, I think, is over or underestimating rather, but a little bit of was, he had a full-time job. I was running a business, and before we jumped into this where he was like maybe on a particular draft, and we said, all right, well, we're both free a couple months from now on these four dates. So let's just put that on the calendar. And then we were targeting those four dates for months. And, basically like this, March 2017 or 2016, I think it's 2016, 2017. That's when we're going to shoot it. It's 2017, rather. March 2017, these four, block out those dates, basically vacation dates for both of us. It's leading up to it. And then between us making that commitment to those 4 days, locking in all the crew, the gear, locations, like the script changed like 2 dozen times for the better. We just kept workshopping it to a point where, Tim mentioned like he rewrote the, one of the last scenes like on set,
Really?
At the end of like shoot day number three into shoot day number four, he went home just because he was like, I don't know if we're going to finish. There's this whole fight choreography scene that wasn't quite working. And he's kind of like, I need to rewrite this now that I, I'm here in the space working with what we have to work with. Ultimately, we still kind of ran out of time, I think that was the, while we had that 4 days booked, I think one of us should have been like, you know, we just added five pages to the script, or, you know, we now have X, Y, and Z in terms of
just having a better sense of production scheduling, I guess.
Yes.
In terms of time management and shoot days.
Yep. And I think the other double-edged sword that I think a lot of low-budget filmmakers often experience is you rely a lot on, you know, in-kind donations and people's time. And we're fortunate enough to have an awesome crew. You know, I think we had initially scoped out at the time, like our in-house camera here for the corporate stuff was a C300 Mark II. Mm-hmm. And we were like, you know, we could lens that up and find ways to make it cinematic, do this as low budget as we can. We were fortunate to get I think it was an Alexa Mini and some Cook Optics lenses, totally for free from Resolution Rentals here in Philly. And naturally, you know, when your camera package gets upgraded and so does your G&E, you know, we went from having this small footprint to like, all right, now we need a, you know, first AC, second AC, we need someone to handle data. You know, it became big in a way that we couldn't really complain because we wanted a certain look, wanted a certain production value. And we, you know, a lot of it was in-kind donation, so we couldn't really turn it down. So all of a sudden, you know, I think setups that we thought were going to be relatively simple, you know, became big. It was kind of like, all right, now let's do the movie shot. Let's do the motorcycle chase.
Right.
Let's do this.
I mean, it is a beautiful picture. If you haven't seen it, you can check out our link in bio at the Film Fund. You can check it out on iTunes as well. It is just the lighting, there's all the camera movement, all the cinematography. It's, I mean, you can tell that you guys really put a lot of love into it.
It was, you know, again, it was one of the most fun projects I've ever been on. I'm hoping to do more of that, you know, that level of filmmaking more regularly. I think, you know, while we have a couple of the, you know, show pilots for TV and streaming platforms, definitely switching your brain to that narrative, you know, narrative grind. If you're not doing it every day or every week, it's definitely tough. So I definitely think if you're trying to make a narrative short film, like you kind of have to live and breathe it for the time that you're in it.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, and that's tough right now with COVID. I mean, we have production guidelines, and I have a short that's, I'm calling it on hiatus because I'm not sure I want to direct it right now with a mask and all the guidelines, but I am still writing. So it is so important to stay in that mindset, that mind frame of storytelling, and not really walk away from it. So I definitely agree with you there. In terms of Americano, like I said, you can check it out at the Film Fund's link in bio. There's a big button there that says watch Americano now, and you click on that, and you can also click through to iTunes from that same link. It premiered at, I believe, Dances with Films in Los Angeles, right, Chris?
Yep. Was that just last year? That was just last year.
That was last summer, yep. Yeah, so yep. It played on the festival circuit, and now it is on iTunes. So we talked a little bit about I'm looking at the script here. It looks like it jumped ahead. I'm supposed to ask you about your sponsorship with the Film Fund. We already talked about that. what inspired you here? Common goals of helping filmmakers getting funding for their projects. Well, I think we could skip over this one here. You know, since you just said you basically wanted that whole collaborative nature and not pivoting your company, but exercising that creative muscle.
Diversifying into more creative work. I don't want to do any less of the corporate and commercial stuff. It's what sustains us, kind of helps our vision to, you know, have stable employment in the film industry for our employees. You know, if we were to just do narrative filmmaking, you know, I don't think we would be able to, you know, have the liberties that we do and the freedom that we do. So again, it's like the two sides of the for the soul and for the bank account. And I think it's important to do both. I think anytime you do just one, you're going to find yourself in some trouble.
Yeah, I love that soundbite, for the soul and for the bank account. Life's always kind of balance of the two, right?
Yeah, and I think just a quick aside, like I have an uncle who is a composer, and I think for him, he made some of his best work when he was like a starving artist and when he was pushed to the edge. And I don't know, fortunately or unfortunately, I think those like that kind of renaissance of like that era of art, I don't know if that's over just because of accessibility, right? You know, I think it's very easy, and you know, the barrier to entry to make a film is a lot lower. So, you know, I don't know that you have to be starving. You know,
you do need health insurance at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know, so if you can take care of that, you know, not worry about, you know, rent and budget and things like that. Like, I think, you know, for me, that's where your mind is more clear and you're able to focus on on being creative. I think you could argue the side of, you know, my uncle, where he's kind of like, when you're pushed to the brink of the edge, you kind of break and find yourself. I don't know. There could be something to that, but I actually think, you know, if you're not worrying about the bills and not worrying about other stuff, you have more energy, more time, and
you can
and more resources to focus on being creative. Exactly.
I mean, there's a reason why a lot of writers go out into, I'm going to name a horror film here, The Cabin in the Woods kind of writing, not the horror film, but
a retreat. Yeah.
they're retreating, the seclusion, you know. It's not like, oh no, I have to pay my electric bill tomorrow and I don't have a job, I'm writing a script. So, I definitely agree with you there. Is that where the name Maestro comes from?
The composer? So it's actually my grandfather, who was the,
okay.
That same uncle's father is my mom's father. He was the national artist for music in the Philippines. He, was credited with doing it. You know, he was the nationalist composer, the most prolific Filipino composer, wrote the lyrics to the national anthem, just did a whole bunch of big things that I didn't know until I was much older. And I set out to make a documentary on him after college. That's, the name of the film was The Maestro. There's a trailer for it on our website. I created a bank account for that documentary, raised a bunch of money, bought my first two, you know, they were DVX 100s. To shoot this documentary. First, it was like a low light kit and a wired microphone and a Manfrotto tripod. And I went to the Philippines, traveled over the US interviewing people and shooting things for it.
That's super interesting.
And that's what, you know, got me the funds to start my show Filmworks, and the name just stuck.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I've always meant to ask you. I mean, I've seen that page on the website and I've never really done a deep dive on it. So that's such a cool story. What do you have in store for the future? Any in terms of new projects?
So going forward, this year has definitely been a challenge. I'd be lying if we said, you know, we are totally cruising and crushing it. Yeah. Aspirations of crushing it. But you know, really just, you know, we are kind of maintaining steady. It's been a decent influx of commercial and corporate work. But I mentioned, you know, this diversification to more creative development stuff. Always have a couple narrative things, you know, in the back burner. Some, you know, one of them is a feature that Tim alluded to that he's been promising me a peek at the script, but you know, I know he's 100 plus pages into multiple drafts of it. On the flip side, we are with the success of the show and really resources we have, COVID kind of accelerated this a little bit. You know, it was always in the strategy for the business to start to produce creative content in somewhat of more of a creative development initiative, where we are making pilots, working on documentaries, things that we own eventually, you know, not client work that someone is paying us to do or telling us how to do it. Just stuff that we thought up ourselves, made ourselves, and, you know, then we go out to the market and hopefully sell it. So we have a couple of pilots in the works. You know, we work on an animated series with another production company. We have a couple of food show pilots that we're working on. I am confident in saying that when I was in film school, 16,
and where did you go to film school again?
I went to NYU, for film and TV. And, so I graduated in 2005. And, at the time, you know, the whole time I was in school, like TV was kind of like, you know, the degree was film and TV, but at the time you were either a filmmaker or you went to TV. And TV was kind of like that, you know, redheaded stepchild kind of the industry, where everyone wanted to be a director or producer, cinematographer coming out of film school. Like, but TV is like kind of where you graduated and you kind of got stuck with a job kind of thing. And it was something that no one really aspired to. And now I think with streaming platforms like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, things like that,
becoming
it's kind
a
of
little
blurred.
Bit more cinematic. Yeah,
absolutely. It's blurred the, you know, that notion of there's film and there's TV, you know, it's kind of starting to become one. You see some crossover artists, you know, take for instance, like someone like Jordan Peele, you know, kind of started out on a TV side and then kind of, you know, won an Oscar and then now is developing stuff for TV.
You've had
again.
That trend too with people like David Lynch, even before the streaming giants kind of took off.
That's true.
You know, obviously Twin Peaks and then his other, you know, Blue Velvet and his other narratives, features, I mean. But
I think
I
he was kind of
has a, he was an outlier, you'd say, in doing that.
Yeah, I think he was more of an outlier than the norm. But I think now with a lot of these platforms, that's the one good thing about, you know, making more digestible content that's still creative. And, you know, that's a viable kind of distribution platform for filmmakers that want to make creative things. It's not, you know, the big screen is no longer the only destination, and that was a crowded, hard to get into space. Now with distribution on digital platforms, I think that those are things that kind of help have more avenues for filmmakers making stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think streaming is so important too. I mean, especially in terms of short form content, that it's accessible. We saw Quibi just go belly up, and that whole model from the beginning was questionable, I think.
I think about that a lot, because we had an idea that we were, we had a pilot that we were producing for Quibi specifically, so we were monitoring it. They dropped on April 6th. I know that because that was my birthday. raised over $1 billion. Went to market April 6th. I wonder if COVID had not happened, if it would have been successful. Quibi being short for quick bites. They predicated themselves on, waiting for your coffee, watch 10 minutes, waiting for the bus, watch 10 minutes. People are home now. They have time to watch.
That's true. And I'm looking at it from the lens of being home. And the Film Fund has always been remote, so I've never been so much for watching content on my phone. So maybe that's just my personal take on it. But I love platforms like Short of the Week and Vimeo and all the staff picks there. I'm not quite sure where I'm going with this, but
if I'm boarding a plane, right? And I've sat down already. I don't have time to watch maybe a 30 or, hour long episode, but I could probably watch 10 minutes, before they shut the internet off and stuff.
So you think it may have made it if not for COVID?
Maybe they would have lasted a little longer. I don't know if the long-term market was there. I question that just because, they were creating a new space, and oftentimes in a market, the first entrant isn't always, the best, but they could have been onto something where, a second entrant into that short form market, streaming market may have more success. They will be the Friendster of MySpace to the Facebook that's coming around the corner.
Is in terms of, since we're talking about Quibi and producing short form content, as well as more creative aspects, what is some advice you would give to other filmmakers? I mean, it could be a production tip, a story tip, producing. I mean, we talked about time management, but anything else you think would be?
I'll speak to the producing and, maybe business side of things. I could confidently say I'm not a director. while I like to write, I'm not a writer, so I'll leave those to some of the other guests that you may have. But I think we touched on it a little bit earlier, and I think you and Tim kind of touched on it as well. But it's really just thinking about the film beyond, getting to your final cut. I think unfortunately nowadays so many films are made that never see the light of day, some really good films. I think people spend so much time, money, and energy in pre-production, production, post-production, and they've put very little thought into what happens after that. And I'm talking, strictly for distribution, whether it's online or, online festival circuit, trying to sell to a network or something like that. I think people don't even think about it. I see so many really, really talented filmmakers that spend all this time, some of their own money, kickstart things, and then they upload to Vimeo and kind of sit back and cross their fingers. And sure, you may get a couple thousand views. That's great. But I think if you have a good idea and you're confident in your product and the people and the collaboration, I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you kind of stop so close to the finish line of getting over the hump and getting more and more people to see it. Ultimately, just like any other artwork, film is one of those pieces of art that is better when shared with other people. I don't know anyone.
I'm guilty of that myself too. Son of Blackbeard, the film that was at that other festival, First Glance Film Festival, with Americano, I still haven't uploaded that. I was keeping it offline for some festivals, and it's on my to-do list. I still haven't uploaded it. So when I was shooting that, I wasn't thinking about distribution at all. It's definitely a lesson learned for me too, in terms of thinking about that step.
Yeah, I think it could even influence before you even shoot or, do a thing. If you're in pre-production and you're kind of I already know that this platform is interested in this, you'll tailor it more to that. You're kind of pre-selling distribution in a way and kind of going that model. It's tough with the short because, the markets for shorts, it's not, you're not going to make money on the short. So it's not necessarily about the return here, but, you guys mentioned the last episode, short films are a calling card. And a calling card's, only so good. It's a numbers game, right? Even in traditional business cards, I'm not going to hand one person a business card and just like sit back and wait for that one person to call me. I'm going to hand as many out in terms of, you know, network and get as many people until, you know, the one person that wants to give me business or exactly. buy something from me is going to call me. So that to me is the equivalent of viewership. It's one thing to be like, we've gone to this awesome festival. There are maybe 200 people in the theater. They all saw it. Great. Now what, you know? And you know, if a producer didn't approach you or distributor didn't approach you for, you know, other projects at that festival, it's kind of like, where else can I get the scene? Where can I get the most eyes on it? Sometimes it is self-distributing on, you know, on YouTube or Vimeo and kind of putting the digital marketing around it if that's your strong suit. There are plenty of people that have self-distributed. For instance, I was researching this one short documentary on like the origins, and it was a short documentary on Sriracha, basically. You know, it was a couple years ago.
I think guy I saw self- that dis- actually. Yeah.
Yes, guy self-distributed on Vimeo, just surrounded with a bunch of ads and things like that. I think Vimeo, YouTube, and you know, I think he made his money back from production plus some, but you know, his whole thing on his blog, I forget the name, director's name, feel horrible about it, but you know, it wasn't money to quit your job over, but he successfully self-distributed, and he writes his whole experience with self-distributing online. And again, I think he's, you know, possibly an outlier as opposed to.
Is it Griffin Hammond?
That sounds right. Yep.
Okay. The power of Google. Thank you, Google.
It's the killer of all barstool debates.
Yes. And brain cells.
I think just, you know, again, you could put so much time and energy into kickstarting, what kind of camera choice, you know, color grades and everything along the line. And then I feel like you're stopping, you know, 2 feet from the finish line if you don't put that same amount of energy into making sure this is shared and viewed. You know, and again, I'm not talking necessarily about just monetary return. You know, you could lump that into the same conversation, but it's really, you know, how can you get people to see this? Because that's what's going to get them to call you or work with you or get you discovered, right. You know, for, you know, and if, you know, if you're just kind of doing it for the fun of it, for the passion, and, you know, you're not trying to be a Hollywood filmmaker or work on a feature or work on anything, you know, that's fine. But I still think you're kind of making this to express yourself and share it with people and make sure it's seen. So you can't just be like, I had a premiere. These people saw it and we got a lot of pats on the back and did a whole red carpet thing. Like, I don't think it stops there. I think you really need to kind of think about the end product.
I 100% agree. It's why we have something on the Film Fund's website called the Auteurs page, where regardless of if you got in a festival or if it's a Vimeo staff pick or what have you, I love Vimeo staff picks. I love Short of the Week. And there are other platforms like Omletto, and there are, we have a YouTube video about short film distribution, but let's say you don't get on one of those platforms because they can't accept everybody. We have a page on our site where you can submit your film and share it with a community called thefilmfund.co/auteurs. So I definitely understand and appreciate the fact of sharing your work. And I should do that with my short film, Son of Blackbeard, because I just have not done it at all. but yeah, it's so important. And it's related to that what's in your back pocket comment that Tim said too. It's like, okay, well, not even the next project is in my back pocket. I need to focus on this project the five next projects, but also this current project. Like, what am I doing with it now that I'm like reaching into that pocket, so to speak? I don't know how far this metaphor can go, but definitely.
how many pockets do you have? How big are these pockets?
My golf tee pocket. It's a custom embroidered pocket on the inside of my sleeve. That's definitely great. Always be thinking
stuck
with
ahead. It for a while.
we made it work a little bit. So Chris, I want to thank you so much for coming. Do you have your Emmy with you? Could we get it on the camera to totally show it off?
I do not. No, I'm trying to see someone else.
Last time I had a call with you, you said your baby was playing with it or something. Yeah, I was a little concerned.
It's at home right now. So we're about to move offices, so I didn't even bother bringing it to the office.
Okay.
I was trying to see if someone else on the team had theirs here, but no, I'll text you a picture later though.
All good. Maybe we'll edit it in the final cut. But Chris, Emmy Award winner Chris Mendoza, I want to thank you so much for coming and speaking about your experience with Maestro Filmworks in terms of corporate work, narrative work, microform content, producer on Americano. We talked about it last week. You can watch that at the link in bio at the Film Fund and on iTunes. We are currently hosting funding contests right now. The deadline is December 8th, so you can write one sentence pitching your film and how you'd use some of that funding. We have a music video contest now that's also new, so be sure to check that out, where you can actually direct the music video for an artist named Mike Vermeil. Dick Vermeil's grandson. I didn't say that last time, but I think it's pretty cool.
Oh, wow. I was going to say.
Yeah. Not a very common name, so why not throw that tidbit in there? We have a documentary contest, a narrative contest, and that music video contest. We have amazing sponsors like Maestro Filmworks. Maestro is sponsoring a post-production prize for color grading services where you can color grade your full short film, actually, because short films have to be 15 minutes long with the film fund. So up to 15 minutes color grading services with Maestro Filmworks. We also have another local sponsor, Expressway Cinema Rentals, who's sponsoring a two-day rental package with an amazing Blackmagic Ursa camera, I believe, and some awesome lenses for that. We have prizes like Kitsplit gift cards, Adobe Premiere, actually not even just Premiere, Adobe Creative Cloud, all app subscriptions. So be sure to check all of that out at our website, thefilmfund.co/contests. We also have a blog, thefilmfund.co/blog, filled with great filmmaking and producing tips. So check that out as well and sign up for our newsletter to stay up to date on what's happening with the Film Fund. Next week, I believe we have the team from Sunday Dinner, Don Finelli and friends. It sounds like some kind of morning show. I'm super excited for that. Thank you everyone for listening. You can tune in every Friday for new episodes where we will release these wherever you listen to podcasts. Chris, thanks so much again. And this is our second ever episode.
Second ever.
To
the third ever.
The third ever will be next Friday. Thanks, awesome. Everybody.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.